You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Testing 1 2 1 2. Tell me if you can hear me. The assassination attempt was not successful. I have escaped unscathed. Rod Ginyard, if you're in the building. Glenn from Philly. I have no idea what the last thing was you heard. I was reading a high power article from Harry Alford. Let me know if you heard that before the coup attempt went down. I'm going to check your comments here. It's 2:29 Eastern. We must record this historic moment. I have escaped unscathed. The assassination attempt. As Ghostface once said, try to assassinate me. Maurice from Philly expressing his concern. So let me know you can hear me, Maurice, and I get right back in the saddle. I want to know that everyone here, the article from Harry Alford. Let me know one way or the other. Natasha, yes. Natasha has spoken. Natasha, check your email. Natasha says, welcome back. They did not have the power to stop Cedric Muhammad. Yes, hold on. I got some funky background music. I'm going to allow everybody 1 minute to come back. Call the troops off. You don't have to send everybody down 95 from New York. I'm good. I believe so strongly in this show that I think that some of you all were running the show in your mind, even when I was not talking. What I need to know is, did you hear the article from Harry Alford on Senator Obama's personal responsibility positions? And I'll know exactly where to pick up after the coup attempt. Rod Ginyard, he says he's back. He didn't hear the article at all. Okay. Oh, man. Maurice from Philly thought it was his job trying to shut him down. He didn't hear the article either. Well, I'm going to read this Harry Alford article. Natasha said it right. She said they did not have the power to stop Cedric Muhammad.
They did not have the power to stop Louis Farrakhan. They were trying to touch on and feed envy.
Couldn't do it.
Within the leadership.
Didn't work.
But as a general.
That's right.
And a man that rose through the ranks through discipline, his presence inspired those men with the discipline he imposed on his own life.
All right, let me read this Harry Alford article. I have no idea what happened, family. It was a coup attempt. They tried to assassinate me, as Ghostface once said. All right, let me read this Harry Alford article one more time. Here we go. He says, "Don't go there, Senator Obama." That's the title of the article. He says, there he was on national television and on Father's Day berating and denigrating African-American males. It wasn't Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, or that vile Bernie Goldberg. It was a presidential candidate trying to appeal to white voters at the expense of the image and reputation of millions of black men who live with their children and love them so. He picked a stereotype that black males abandon their families as if this isn't a concern amongst all ethnicities. The single mother crowd is growing amongst all groups. Teenage pregnancy is at an all-time high for all groups, but not just African Americans. The broken family or matriarchal black family was an attempted self-fulfilling prophecy. It started back in the 1960s. I was at the University of Wisconsin and our psychology books were talking about this. My friends and I couldn't understand it as none of us experienced the broken black family. We all had fathers and they raised us along with our mothers, but soon after that you could see the external factors setting in. The Vietnam War and the military draft were very anti-black family. We would drive down to South Side Chicago and go into nightclubs like the Guys and Gals on Halsted Street. There we would be noticeable, or it would be noticeable, designated sections of sisters who were without male escorts. Their husbands, fiancés, or boyfriends had been drafted and were either in Vietnam or about to go. They would sit there en masse. They would dance, but that was it. More than a few were pregnant. It was sad, and the fact that many of them would lose their man to this evil war was indeed tragic. That was the beginning of the full government-sponsored assault on the black family. During the Vietnam War, the military draft was a black male killer. In addition to a rigged draft that put our black men in harm's way at great disproportional numbers, the drug importation from Southeast Asia began, says here, as depicted in the movie American Gangster. The government sponsored much of the heroin that was invading our cities. Later, during the Iran-Contra scandal, we found that the government introduced crack cocaine into our communities at an overwhelming rate. This invasion was coupled with gun running. How in the world did so many AK-47s come into our communities? We all know how and why. It was the greatest social intervention upon a distinct group of people in our history. Psychological trauma of our veterans, those who survived our jive wars, drug trade being one of the few alternatives to income and sentencing guidelines that would send blacks with crack to prison 10 times longer than a white with powder cocaine. The development of the prison industrial complex, built to house more and more black males, the neighborhood gang wars that were sponsored by gun runners and major drug traffickers, school systems that rendered our children semi-literate and incapable of making an honest living and supporting a family, are all among a few of the major assaults on our community. They want to break us. They won't break us, but we do have to bend once in a while. So after hearing Senator Barack Obama say black men are missing in action, MIA, or absent without leave, AWOL, and need to man up, it makes me enraged. I understand what Reverend Jesse Jackson was saying a few days ago. I feel his pain. The fact is that the number one killer of black males 18 to 30 is murder. They aren't MIA, they are KIA, killed in action. No, they aren't AWOL, they are POW, prisoners of war. It is indeed a war, and I suggest Senator Obama read the book Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys by his fellow Chicagoan Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu. Senator, you need a little education on this subject. Now I'm reading Harry Alford, the NNPA columnist and president of the National Black Chamber of Commerce. He goes on to finish. He says, the worst hatred is self-hatred, and we must avoid it at all times. It is so easy to fall for the hype and start chanting stereotypes about our own. We have challenges, but to write off black males as bad fathers and husbands is a bunch of negative bunk. It is dangerous for us to allow people to put us in this mold, and we must be vigilant to fight the appearance or verbiage whenever and wherever it comes from. I know we need to make sure we take advantage of the opportunity to have for the first time ever a black president. However, it cannot come at the expense of our culture and stature. For every absent black father, there are two or more absent white fathers. Don't single us out in a disproportionate manner. Senator Obama, I know you need more white votes, but you don't think, or don't you think you have to sacrifice? Let me start all over. He says, Senator Obama, I know you need more white votes, but don't think you have to sacrifice the image of black America or support some racist stereotype to get it. It's not worth it. Now, again, this is Harry Alford, who I know. I have a lot of respect for him. He is CEO of the National Black Chamber of Commerce. This man gets White House access as well as street cred. And he's saying, don't go there, Senator Obama. Now, I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, family, you heard Senator Obama's quote on Meet the Press. If you heard that, that was exactly where I started reading the article by Harry Alford. Okay. Okay, good. Vic from Huntsville, Alabama. Thank you, sir. Says it stopped somewhere in the beginning where he's talking about the family in the 60s. Okay, so you all, we only missed maybe about 10 minutes, maybe. Danielle from Atlanta, she has my back. She says they cannot keep you and the Black Coffee Channel down. It's our time to shine. Antoine Fisher. Thank you, Danielle. E from Queens, friend. We missed you, Danielle. Now, Natasha agrees. Okay, now, okay, Natasha. Natasha and I are having a side conversation. Okay, I understand. Sam Souvenir. Sam Souvenir sent me an inside joke. Hey, Sam Souvenir, provisions have been made, my brother. Some of you did not hear the interview with Senator Obama. Okay, I'm going to just play this again. All right. It's not that long. You heard what I just read from the president of the National Black Chamber of Commerce, written a couple weeks ago. Here's Senator Obama on Meet the Press last week. Tom Brokaw doing the questioning.
Let me ask you about race. We have some recent polling on that. And as you know, it's a whispered, if not unspoken, issue in your campaign. Racism against blacks widespread in America. That's the question. When African Americans were asked that question, they said yes, 78% to 20%. Racial justice in America was the second half of this question. Again, we asked this question of African Americans. Is it bias against blacks? 67%. To no, 27%. You see those numbers the same way?
You know, here's what I've said based on my life experience, is that there have been profound changes since I was born, 61. When I accept the Democratic nomination, it will be the 40th anniversary of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. I am in a position to accept the Democratic nomination for president. That is a profound change that we should celebrate. We've still got work to do. And there is no doubt that discrimination still exists in various parts of American life. There's no doubt that I think
margins that we saw in that poll.
Well, I think that when you say it's widespread, people think of, well, I've had an experience and they maybe extrapolate all across the society. I think that's a mistake. I think the vast majority of Americans are people of goodwill. They want to do the right thing. The biggest problem that we have in terms of race relations, I think, is dealing with the legacy of past discrimination, which has resulted in extreme disparities in terms of poverty, in terms of wealth, and in terms of income. Our inner cities are a legacy of what happened in the past. And the question is less assigning blame or rooting out active racism, because that's not the reason that those inner cities are in such bad shape, but rather figuring out, are we willing to make the investments to deal with that past history so we can move forward to a brighter future? And that involves investing in early childhood education, fixing the schools in those communities, being willing to work in terms of job retraining. And those are serious investments. It also requires some responsibility on the part of the black community. And that's why I've talked about, for example, the need for fathers to re-engage in the lives of their children. We can't have more than half of African-American children growing up without knowing their dads or having an incidental contact with their dads and expect that that's not going to have some sort of impact.
How many more times have you heard from Jesse Jackson about his comments about your speech to black families?
I haven't heard too much from Reverend Jackson. I look, the fact is Reverend Jackson used to preach similar issues and recognize the need for responsibility. What I've said is it's not an either-or proposition. Those of us who are fortunate, those of us who are in positions of power, the society as a whole, we've got to take responsibility for creating ladders of opportunity for people. People who are poor, impoverished, in inner cities and rural communities and barrios all across the country, they've got to be responsible for grabbing hold of those ladders and using individual initiative to walk up those ladders.
Finally.
Okay, now I have covered my ground. I have walked back the entire hour number three from the beginning when the assassination attempt went down on me. I got the blinds closed slightly. Somebody said they wanted to send the Black Nation Armed Reserves to defend me. Well, I guess I'd be shot right now because I don't know if any such exists. All right, so you've heard Senator Obama on Meet the Press and you've heard Harry Alford, his column. Kwame Kilpatrick from Detroit has checked in. He says, I'm on board with the Black Bank Initiative. In the words of the great Chuck D, I own loans. Suckers got me running from the bank. Who count the money in the neighborhood, but we spending money to no end looking for a friend. Wow. Quoting Chuck D in support of the Black Bank Initiative. Yeah, E-Double from Indianapolis said, let's call the Black Nation Army Reserves. Brother, if you have their phone number, please send it to me because I didn't know they existed. Thank you, E-Double from Indianapolis. And Cameron was concerned that once Black Coffee Channel went down, that we were going to come back with gangster rap, booty music, and coke rap. That may have been my little effort to mainstream the station. Start playing some gangster rap, booty music, and coke rap. Gotta play some coke rap, right? Mm-hmm. Murder, Death, Kill. Hollis from Toronto says, listen, we need to start being adults and work for and with others and stop flip-flopping on things like Justin Timberlake. Why are we so willing to give these folks ghetto passes? The way he abandoned Janet is all you need to know. People put faith in yourselves because we're all we've got. Do for self or die. Hollis said, this is an opportunity to bring up Justin Timberlake's ghetto pass. Natasha says, I find the article misleading. She's talking about Harry Alfred's article. Natasha says, I find this article misleading. I don't want to hear no R&B music. This is, I've just survived a coup attempt. I need to come something a little harder, I think. I think it's a little bit better. Natasha says, growing up, many of my friends, and I mean the majority of them, did not know or have a consistent relationship with their fathers. It was the most astonishing thing for me to find so many people that did not know their dads, especially with mine being in the home. This continues to be a pattern. I know a 16-year-old boy whose 15-year-old girlfriend or ex-girlfriend is pregnant, and he told me that he was not going to miss football practice to go to the ultrasound appointment. Damn. He also did not know the due date and told me he didn't have time for that kind of stuff. This is a prime example of a young man that, not because of the war on drugs, is probably not going to have a relationship of any substance with his child. This young child, or this young man rather, does not have a relationship with his father and has no alternative father figure. This is an epidemic in our communities, and as I and many of my female friends, Tasha continues. Natasha said, they ain't got nothing to do with the war on drugs. The 15-year-old is not going to miss football practice to go to an ultrasound appointment. Natasha continues. She said, this is an epidemic in our communities, and as I and many of my female friends can attest to, an issue that subconsciously plays out in the mental and emotional strength of their offspring. Black men do need to step up, and not all are the issue, but the ones who are is who this message is for. Go to any high school football game and you will see far more moms in the crowd than dads. I don't care if the unwed mother or teenage pregnancy numbers are on the rise in all communities. I only care about my own. So I would much prefer to have Obama deliver the message than some white man. It is not like this is a secret, Natasha from Miami says. So why should we not have a leader that will speak specifically to our issues? Issues that are near and dear to his heart. At least there is a presidential candidate that passionately is concerned about the state of our community. That is more than I can say about any white candidate. Although I do not agree with Obama's spin on racism in general, but have no issue with him addressing, Natasha continues. Does not agree with everything Senator Obama says about racism, but she has no problem with Senator Obama addressing absent fathers in our community. Black men face a unique challenge in this nation, and no woman, no matter how good of a person she may teach him to be, she cannot teach him how to be a man, and we need to have as many boys with a positive black figure in their home. E-Double from Indianapolis says, who is it that said do for self or die? Whoa, that's the mantra, that's the cry. I may get a shirt line made off that. Okay, hold on, I gotta educate E-Double from Indianapolis. E-Double, the person who said do for self or die, the great Hollis Baptiste from Toronto, is the same person that we've been waiting on to design t-shirt for us for 1 year. So if you have the entrepreneurial spirit, go right ahead. But Hollis Baptiste is keeping the legacy alive if he's not producing a t-shirt for us. Do for self or die. Yeah, Rod Ginyar, I had to take it to the early 80s and late 70s with this instrumental bed. Hope you like that. A little funk. Lawrence from Indianapolis, he weighed in. Lawrence from Indianapolis checked in earlier. He says, this is Lawrence E. Williams from Indianapolis. Hey, Cedric, I finally got a chance to listen to your show. It's been a while. By the way, I am about to launch my own internet radio talk show and blog. When we are ready to go, I will let you know when we launch. And Lawrence goes on to say, hello, Cedric. Discrimination is widespread. Since he was raised in the Central Plains state of Kansas, sure, he, Obama, would think discrimination is isolated. Senator Barack Obama was raised by white rednecks, who I can almost guarantee repeated the Republican mantra, all you have to do is pull yourselves up by the bootstrap. I don't know. I don't know about Senator Obama's mother. I know he threw his grandmother under the bus once upon a time, saying that she talked bad about blacks in front of him. But I expect to see Senator Obama's mother any week now. That's what you call pulling out the big guns, know what I mean? The other day I was walking on the streets out here in D.C. and all these young people were wearing these T-shirts. Something about respect their vote. I had to come home and find out what they was talking about. Here's why all the young teenagers who otherwise wouldn't care about politics and voting, here's why they were wearing these T-shirts running up on me and very excited.
A lot of excitement for the coming election at today's voter registration drive here at home. The Hip Hop Caucus brought out Grammy-winning artist T.I. for this drive at the 9:30 Club today. Performer Young Berg also showed up to encourage the crowd. The Hip Hop Caucus unveiled their nationwide voter registration campaign targeting 18 to 29-year-olds. T.I. says it was easy for him to get involved.
I've always felt, you know, that it was imperative for young people, the hip-hop community, as a generation and as a culture, for us to get out there and become a part of the decision-making process.
The campaign called Respect My Vote is targeting 12 states and the District of Columbia.
Now, the other day, Senator Obama had an economic kitchen cabinet meeting. Some real big wigs there, none of them black. Paul Volcker, Robert Rubin, Linda Tyson, I believe. So let me bring you this audio from Kudlow and Company, a show that I used to watch regularly. I don't find myself watching it too much, but I figured he'd be on top of it. Here's a little back and forth on Senator Obama's economic meeting the other day.
Senator Obama came home to an economic summit of advisors today with new ideas to revive the economy. Here to tell us, summit participant, former Clinton economic advisor, Laura DeAndrea Tyson. Laura, thank you for coming back on the program. I've been missing you.
It's a pleasure, Larry.
All right. You look great, and I appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you.
I ask you about a headline. Mm-hmm. Obama wants to revive economy. This is up on the Journal, Laura. Okay. And it said, Democrat Barack Obama is telling economic advisors he would, quote, move rapidly and vigorously to put in place new incentives to revive an economy that's losing jobs and ailing on every front. Were there new incentives today, Laura?
Well, we did talk a lot about economic stimulus, as I think you mentioned earlier, and we talked both about the kinds of incentives one might put in to a package of stimulus, and we also talked about the issue of the vulnerability of financial markets right now and what that meant for longer-term financial market oversight and regulation. Those were two major issues.
I'm sorry. Can you share any of that incentive discussion with us?
Well, we did agree not to attribute things to individuals. What I would say is there was a general consensus that a second stimulus package as insurance made sense. There was a general consensus that one part of that should be on infrastructure spending. You know that Senator Obama has proposed a new infrastructure financing facility. There are hundreds of billions of dollars around the world of money that would be interested in investing in U.S. infrastructure if we had the right capability, the right facility to make that happen. So we talked about that. We talked about rebates for energy, for people people in cold weather states that are going to confront very high oil prices and gas and heating oil prices this year. Longer term, we really talked about the need to make critical investments in our economy. There was consensus in this room, and this was business leaders, labor leaders, and economists. There was consensus in this room that part of our problem is that we have not been making adequate investments in the United States in infrastructure, in energy, in education, in health. And it's all come together now in terms of a very disappointing expansion where the median family has essentially lost ground during an expansion and now is being clobbered by a housing crisis, an oil crisis, and a credit crunch. It's very serious.
I want to give you a quote from McCain advisor in a second, but before I do, just follow through. You mentioned infrastructure on energy. Was there any revisiting of the offshore drilling issue?
Actually, we did not discuss the offshore drilling issue. We discussed more the general issue of trying quickly to get at a very large backlog around the country. We had a couple of people who are from the states there talking about the infrastructure projects that are now being pulled back, and they can be congestion reduction projects, they can be projects that improve energy efficiency of buildings, all of this being pulled back because of the dire budget circumstances which the states are in. So part of the stimulus would be to provide support to the states to actually continue to make investments that we believe would be sensible for our long-term future. But we did not discuss, I'm really reporting on the meeting, we did not discuss the issue of oil drilling.
No, I appreciate that very, very much. Listen to what McCain advisor Carly Fiorina had to say on their morning conference call with some media types. Here it comes.
The reality is when an economy is slowing, if you raise taxes and you curtail free trade through isolationist policies, bad economic times become worse. And that is precisely the proposal that Barack Obama is making. Let's raise taxes and let's become isolationist.
Laura Tyson, I'll give you equal time on that one.
Right. Well, I just don't know what that's based on. There certainly is no isolationist trade policy here. This is a man who just came back from meeting leaders all around the world who basically is committed to rebuilding U.S. leadership and reputation around the world. There's not a single thing in his trade policy agenda which you would say is an isolationist trade policy. He has said he wants trade agreements going forward which actually deliver more benefits to more Americans. I think Americans would agree with that. We should have trade policies that bring more benefits to more Americans. That's not isolationism. As far as the tax increases are concerned, let's just be very clear about this. What Senator Obama has said is that some of the tax cuts that are scheduled to expire as a result of the Bush budget and the congressional budget, they will expire. And what he is saying is for those Americans who have incomes of over $250,000 a year, their taxes will rise. In some cases, in most cases, they will not rise to the levels of capital gains taxation or dividend taxation that existed in the 90s. In some cases, as in the income tax rate, they will rise to levels in the 90s. You know what? The 90s was a great period. That period of time with those tax rates, 1993 to 2000, the longest and strongest economic expansion ever. I will remind Carly Fiorina that in 1993, the Republican members of the Congress said if President Clinton's tax increase, as they called it, was passed, the economy would tank. The economy did quite the opposite.
All right, that's a nice little catfight. Laura Tyson. Natasha says Obama can't pull his mom out on the trail because she is deceased. He can, however, pull out his grandmother and has already pulled out his Asian half-sister. Oops. Thank you, Natasha. E-Double from Indianapolis, he says, does anybody think that Obama is playing the game to get in, or has he sold his soul to them boys? Stan from Camden's in the building. He says, what up? Just checking in, listen all the time. As for me, I've been about the bills. Keep me in your prayers and keep up the good fight, okay? When Stan comes in, we always keep him in our prayers. He lost his wife earlier this year, and it's tough. So we love you, Stan. Thanks for letting us know you're here. Natasha from Miami says, the rhetoric of pulling oneself up is not a white thing. My Caribbean black mother told me that in America, because of my skin color, I would have to work twice as hard to get just as far. And that was just the way it was, and nothing would be taken as an excuse. Dale Muhammad, his brother said, peace. Brother Dale from Memphis, still in Milwaukee. Can you believe that the Black Holocaust Museum here is being closed? Oh, yeah, I absolutely can believe it, Dale. Black Holocaust Museum closing. Wow. I'm not surprised. I know how we are. We don't support nothing. I already know that, Dale. You can give me more information on that so I can keep talking about it. Well, we headed into hour number 4. I may have to go over just to make up. As some of you know, there was an assassination attempt on me earlier, but I survived. This week, I'm debuting new hourly intros. So let's go into hour number 4 with this right here.
We are in the mold of the old prophets. Old prophets stood on the wall as watchmen. If we are on our job, we are watching. Watching. What are you watching for? If you were in the army and you were given a post to stand guard, you're standing guard over something of value. Sleeping on your post is dangerous. In wartime, it's punishable by death. Watchmen, get up on the wall. Watchmen, watch out for the sheep. Watchmen, the wolves come to eat the sheep. Watchmen, sound the alarm. Watchmen, go out and kill the wolf that wants to kill the sheep. Watchmen, get on your job. But if the watchman falls asleep on the wall, then the sheep get eaten up by the wolves.
Oh, you know, it's a great day when Jimi Hendrix follows the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Hour number 4, let's go.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief.
July 30th, 2008. Hey, maybe that the hit that was put out on me earlier will get me to put the camera up sooner so we could have had evidence for the perpetrators before they left. With no camera, though, it just becomes a street legend that they moved on me today at around 2:10 Eastern time. Natasha is going to a meeting. She wants to know, will I be running past 4? Yes, yes. Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey, he says, I think Natasha is simplifying the issue. Black men have to deal directly with the criminalization of anything that makes money or allows us to protect our families and selves. These young boys are indirectly affected by it. In some homes, men are working too much to be in the home. Hollis from Toronto, he says, Obama personifies what most right-thinking black people admire. Love for your woman, love for your children, love for your God, love for education. If most black men could follow this example or part of it, we as a people would have a better future. The black family needs healing. Also, we need to show more love. Well, we'll continue to burn the fires on the back and forth, different positions on the article by Harry Alford, president of the National Black Chamber of Commerce, and Senator Obama's words on Meet the Press with Tom Brokaw. By the way, I'm not really feeling Tom Brokaw in the spot of Tim Russert. He's trying to have an attitude now. You feeling me? He's trying to have an attitude like Tim Russert used to do naturally. But after years of watching Tom Brokaw as a straight newscaster, it doesn't work. Rod Ginyard says, Jimi Hendrix was a very accomplished musician, having grown his chops on the Chitlin circuit with the likes of B.B. King and Ray Charles and among others. Tragic brother, but talented. Yeah, I think the Isley brothers, too, had interaction with Jimi Hendrix. Lawrence Williams from Indianapolis says, to answer E from Indianapolis on his question, has Senator Obama sold his soul? Consider this and think about that question. While in Israel, he informed the leaders of that country that he would support any action that they would take against Iran's development of, I guess, nuclear weapons, Lawrence is saying. Hollis says, why can't whites get it? People like Obama, they see him as a breath of fresh air. Why did Jesse have to go get those hostages? Because the hostage takers prefer Jesse. Why is Muhammad Ali the most popular sports person? The world admires black men who strive for perfection. The minister said this. Jakim from the Bronx. Peace, brother. Been a couple of weeks since we heard from Jakim from the Boogie Down. Hey, Jakim, did you hear the show where I played Just Ice and KRS-One, Masha Tup, a couple weeks ago? Jakim says, Brother Cedric, there are many of us who are working damn hard to excel in this country. And for Obama and Bill Cosby to speak as if there are not a multitude of brothers and sisters who are working three times as hard as the Caucasian to earn and prosper is offensive. Okay, that's strong. I think this is a real discussion here. World trade talks collapsed. Let me read the article from today's Wall Street Journal. Global trade talks fail as new giants flex muscle. It says here, a seven-year effort to forge a new global trade pact collapsed over farm tariffs on Tuesday, reflecting a dramatic shift in the influence and the interest of trading powerhouses China, India, and Brazil. The failure by negotiators from over 30 countries and blocs at the World Trade Organization in Geneva leaves the so-called Doha round of talks dead in the water for the foreseeable future, said European Union Trade Chief Peter Mandelson. The setback could also signal an end to some 60 years of continuous expansion of global free trade deals, some trade diplomats and experts said. The trade summit, among the longest global trade summit diplomats could ever remember, came undone over what seemed to be a simple bargain. Rising titans such as China and India were to lower their tariffs on industrial goods in exchange for European and American tariff and subsidy cuts on farm products. China and India, however, demanded a safeguard clause that would allow them to raise tariffs on key products or crops such as cotton, sugar, and rice if there were a sudden surge in imports. The two sides couldn't agree, however, on where to set the threshold for any import surge that would trigger the clause. The U.S. wanted to set the trigger at 40%. China and India wanted the trigger set much lower at a 10% increase. Diplomats emerged exhausted on Tuesday to trade blame over who had derailed the negotiations. whose original goal in 2001 had been to benefit farmers in poor countries by giving them greater access to wealthy markets. In the face of the global food crisis, it's unconscionable that this came down to how much countries could raise their barriers to imports of food, U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab said in an interview referring to positions taken by China and India. Ms. Schwab and President Bush, she said President Bush, had called her on Monday night to say, quote, we should do everything possible, end quote, to secure a deal. Quote, to see this fall or fail is heartbreaking, she said. Negotiators from big developed countries were equally scathed over U.S. claims that Washington had made significant sacrifices while demanding more access to emerging economies. It's unfortunate that in a development round, we couldn't agree to an issue of livelihood and security, said Indian Trade and Commerce Minister Kamal Nath, who emerged as one of the dominant negotiators in the talks. That sounds nice, right? Let me show you all what was going on behind the scenes at these trade talks. Had the article up in the national international news section, blackelectorate.com. This is what the West is not reporting. After you hear this, you will know who the gangster of the week is. I'm going to get a little bit into some stuff going on in Africa this hour, but I'm going to go a little over. All right. This IPS story is loading up very slowly. Let me summarize. But basically, one of the disputes in general, there's a few things going on. We've talked about it before. These European partnership agreements, EPAs, which African and Caribbean nations have signed against their better interests. I think earlier in the year, we played a story from the Africa Channel about how this was affecting the farmers and folks in Kenya negatively, signing agreements against their best interest. So this was a factor. The EPA agreements between European countries and African and Caribbean nations, a dispute over bananas. You can read an article from the Jamaica Gleaner that explains that. And then there's an article where we quote Kenya's trade minister is quoted. Now, here's the article. Check this out. This is last week. This was Friday or Saturday. EU rushing EPAs lest African states change their minds. Brussels is tempted to skip the translation of the interim economic partnership agreements, EPAs, into the 23 official European languages because of concerns that some African, Caribbean, and Pacific ACP countries may change their minds about signing the final agreements. An internal European Commission document dated July 17, 2008 reveals that translating and legally verifying the languages of the interim EPAs that were initialed last year is proving more burdensome and time-consuming than originally foreseen. With a view to speeding up the signing of all interim agreements in 2008, we suggest, exceptionally, to move away from the traditional way of establishing authentic text in all languages at the time of signature while agreeing to adopt them at a later stage. Translation. They did not even want to take the chance of translating these documents into the languages of 23 countries because they did not want the African and the Caribbean nations any time to change their mind because they were not pleased with the agreements. Is that gangster or what? These agreements have been running off of initials. They haven't been formally signed yet. Now, here in Jamaica, last Friday, a former chief negotiator said it's not too late for the Caribbean community, CARICOM, to pull out of these bad economic partnership agreements with Europe. That's what they were worried about. So that's why Brussels is saying, don't translate it. It takes too much time. We don't want the Africans and the Caribbean nations to change their mind. Sir Shirdath Ramphal told the Caribbean Media Corporation that there were precedents for Caribbean countries to follow and that the Europeans themselves were not examining the flaws in the trade deal. See, the African and Caribbean nations only has flaws in what they initialed and they don't want to sign it. So that's why the EU is rushing, skipping the official translation process. Quote, this is what he says here. He says the Europeans do it all the time. They initial, they pause, they review, they come back, they regroup, and they re-argue. What has happened to us that we have lost that capacity to maneuver? Why are we playing the European game? Asked the former head of the Caribbean regional negotiating machinery. Sir Shirdath said that the rest of the developing world in their negotiations with Europe decided to either initial an interim agreement or sign nothing at all. He also expressed concern that Caribbean countries have broken the solidarity that existed within the African, Caribbean, and Pacific states, the ACP. He says, what we have done is break ranks with those brothers who have stood by us in the bad days of the loan round and said we will sign up with the EU. Now the EU is going around hitting these countries over their heads with the Caribbean signatures. The former negotiator also accused Caribbean governments of caving into pressure from Europe, even though they knew they were not getting a good deal. Quote, not a single Caribbean president or prime minister has put his hand on his heart and said that this is good for me. They all have said we know this is not good enough, but we don't think we could have done better. It's a bad agreement, but it's better than no agreement, is what they're saying. He warned that there would be serious implications for the Caribbean, noting that even though the EPA was negotiated with Europe, it would extend to trade relations with the rest of the world. Any trade agreement we conclude after this with any country or group of countries in the context of free trade that they will demand, and we cannot deny, there will be similar treatment to Europe. So we are concluding an agreement with the world, and we're concluding a bad agreement with the world. So this brother in Jamaica, this former negotiator, he's saying, don't sign it. Don't sign these bad EPA agreements. And the EU knows it. So they're rushing to bypass this official translation process where the formal agreement has to be put in the languages of 23 nations so that the people and the government leaders can read it. And then it would be signed. So if you want an example of the weakness, the yet emerging strength of African, Caribbean, Pacific countries, this whole negotiation round with the WTO and these EPA agreements with Europe give a good example. So I hope you could follow that. But I got to salute the EU. I mean, it's not even close this week. If you want to send in another nominee for Gangster of the Week, I'll take it. But I don't see how anyone can surpass the EU nations. I'll give you a moment. If you want to nominate some other Gangsters of the Week, feel free. But man, bypassing the official translation into 23 languages in order to get the African and Caribbean nations and Pacific nations to sign some garbage. Man, that's a major step. Send in your comments. You know what we're talking about. BlackOwnedBank.com. Will you be opening up a black an account at a black commercial bank, or will you be starting an investment club in a SUSU, rotating credit and savings association amongst your family and friends? That's the purpose of the initiative. And whether you are voting for Senator Obama or not, whether you are caught up in various disagreements and debates, spirited discussions, I think this is something that we all can do, one thing or another. Gwen from Lake Charles says, Cedric, you are right about Jimi Hendrix. The Isleys, Little Richard, and others were influences. Thank you. Lake Charles, Gwen, what state is that? Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey says, without good adult male role models that look like you, a vacuum is created and these kids govern themselves. As they become men, they still need to become mature. We are dealing too much with the symptom and not the disease. There is a psychological warfare at play that is being ignored. Or as a prodigy from Mobb Deep once said, what, there's a war going on outside no man is safe from? And Jaquin from the Bronx, he says, yes, sir. He said, I did hear Just Ice and KRS on the show. I thank you for giving the BX pioneers its shine. So Cedric, we really need more of the Black Coffee Channel. Your commentary and musical selections keep a brother going strong on hump day. Indeed. Thank you, Jaquin, for the encouragement. Jaquin, will you walk down to Carver Bank? I don't think they have a branch in the Bronx, but you can go to www.blackownedbank.com. Let me know if you're considering opening up a savings or checking account with Carver Savings. Carver Bank in New York is the only publicly traded black-owned bank. LAZAR from Brooklyn says, Cedric, I have a question. Whites, white Jews, and others got their wealth through robbery, slaughter, and slavery. Since we are always on the subject of black infrastructure, would it be wise to follow the same formula? Or is that the only principle? Excuse my overly critical attitude, but all we do is point out problems and use pompous words to describe them. I'm sick and tired of listening. With thousands of people listening to you, Cedric, we can actually do something. I agree. That's why I'm asking people to start an investment club, practice cooperative economics in their hood. That's why I'm working on this peace treaty, this agreement down in North Carolina. We're working with Saving Ourselves in Newark, Bloods, Crips, Latin Kings, MS-13, other people coming to the table. I don't know what to tell you other than to support what we're doing. But let me answer your question. I would disagree, Eleazar. Jews did not get their wealth from just what you say. Read my interview, and this is what I say about America. America could not be a nation as powerful as it is without following some scientific principles. You cannot just beat people all day long into an efficient government in certain respects. So read my interview with Steven Silbiger. I think you already have, the author of The Jewish Phenomenon. You'll see some of the principles that Jewish people practice. Now, see, the Jewish community has something called free loan societies. That was a big part of how they developed economic power in America. Jewish free loan societies. Where's the Black free loan society? So people didn't just get into power from robbing, stealing, raping, and pillaging. They got into power through cooperative economics among their own. It's too easy to say that that people have stolen their way into this position. No, they practiced certain righteous principles among their own while they were doing whatever else they were doing. Read my interview with the author of the book, The Jewish Phenomenon. He explains why Jewish people have disproportionate wealth. And you can see my interview. I asked him about the raping and the pillaging. But that Jewish man admires Marcus Garvey more than Black people do. Steven Silbiger praises Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, in his book, The Jewish Phenomenon. Why are Black people, you go around and ask them about Marcus Garvey, they don't even know what to tell you. Why is that? Let me, do y'all know there's an autism problem among Somali populations, among white people? It seems like wherever in Minneapolis, I believe in the Middle East and in a European country, autism spiking among Somalis. Let's hear about the problem in Minnesota. This is our family. What are we going to do about it?
To end our week of autism coverage, we're going to tell you about one group of very young children being classified on the autism spectrum at what some say is an alarming rate. We're talking about Somali children in Minneapolis. Their colorful shops line the streets, catering to their own culture and drawing in ours.
Somali community came to Minnesota in 1993.
By that time, Somalia's political chaos had led to the killing or starvation of many of its people. For refugees, Minneapolis offered a place to start a new life, a new business, or a new family.
Many things attracted the Somalis to Minnesota to stay. Good health cover and good education.
Huda Farah works with the Department of Health on refugee resettlement. Through her work, she's noticed something troubling.
We're seeing increased number in autism.
Did you have that back in Somalia?
Not many.
Big boy!
The Minneapolis schools are seeing higher numbers, too.
It is so glaring here in Minneapolis, I couldn't not see it.
Ann Harrington has been identifying kids on the autism spectrum in the Minneapolis School District for over 20 years.
We have seen a tremendous number of children that are Somali, but born here in the United States or in Minneapolis, who have autism.
Out of 100 children in the Minneapolis School's Early Childhood Special Education Classroom Program for Autism, 25% of them are Somali. The district as a whole has only about 6% of students who speak or hear Somali language at home.
They are showing the more severe forms of autism, not the broad spectrum of autism that we see in our general population.
Shamake Osman is one of these kids.
I knew something wrong, but I didn't know what's wrong. I never heard anything about autistic or autism.
No. Shamake's mom said he would bang his head all the time. He wouldn't sleep. He couldn't talk.
They tested for school first, in school. Then after that, they said he had autism. And I never heard her say, what's the mean autism? What kind of sickness?
Hello, everybody.
Perhaps most troubling is that all of the Somali children the Minneapolis schools have identified with autism were born here, like Shamake. The district doesn't have a single child born in Somalia who immigrated here receiving special ed services for the disorder.
I believe it's vaccination.
In the rule of Somalia, there's no immunizations.
Huda says parents worry not only about the vaccinations their kids receive, but about immunizations they themselves received before entering the United States.
When Somali parents come from the refugee camps, some of them get immunizations within those camps.
Huda says because of poor record keeping in the refugee camps, some Somalis receive the same vaccinations 3 and 4 times.
That's very worrisome. We need to find out what's going on.
In the U.S., the CDC says that research so far has shown no link between vaccinations and autism, but a number of studies are still underway.
But doctors in Sweden are calling for research on another possible cause that could help Somalis here in Minnesota.
Sweden has a high incidence rate of autism in its Somali children as well. Doctors there are wondering if for Somali people, a lack of sunlight in the winter, the widespread use of sunscreen, and efforts to avoid sun exposure are resulting in too little vitamin D being absorbed through their dark skin. They theorize lack of vitamin D, possibly in conjunction with genetic or environmental factors, could be a cause of autism and are calling for an official study.
I think it's something that is interesting and should be pursued through research. But
Judy Punko is an epidemiologist for the Minnesota Department of Health. She says we're not set up to study the Swedish theory here.
We are attempting to develop a data system that will collect data that is reliable and valid so that we can identify cases and track them over time.
The health department is just in the beginning stages of setting up that system. But in response to the high Somali autism rates reported in Minneapolis, the health department has formed a small study group made up of school representatives, epidemiologists, and U of M medical experts to look at possible causes.
It's very concerning. It's astounding to hear the numbers are so large.
For now, the questions in the subset of our community continue.
At least every week, I heard about new family that have a child with autism. We need to really investigate and find out what's going on.
The trend of Somali children born in Minnesota with autism has striking similarities to a finding in the Middle East. Researchers there discovered that children of Ethiopian descent born in Israel had high rates of disorders on the autism spectrum. The same was not true for children born in Ethiopia who immigrated to Israel. Ethiopians and Somalis share a genetic tie. A forum is planned for more conversation on this topic in the near future, and it will be hosted by Ann Harrington and Huda Farah, who you saw in our story, and details will appear on our website when they're available.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.